the chicken wire. Getting sick and tired of a friggin' liar. Pelican with some very soft mangoes. A closet full of skeletons and terry cloth kangos. Flew the coop before you hit it, let me warn you. She did a cool hula hoop, but don't get any on you. It's all a big scam to make y'all eat pig ham. When he's on the mic, he's like the trigger man. Fig jam, doom. Not to be confused with nobody, especially since the flows he used were so nutty. Never too woozy to go study.
All right, hello and welcome to another episode of Unfixed here coming out of Dublin, Ireland, as we do. This is episode 3 out of Dublin. We got a good show for you tonight, I think. We got a exciting, dynamic guest, and we're all fired up. How are you doing tonight, Toby?
I'm really excited tonight, actually. We're going to sort of, you know, have an amazing guest, and the weather's fantastic outside. So
it's badass. It's bitchin'. So, yeah, tonight, well, who's our guest tonight, Toby, you know?
We have a knight in shining armor tonight.
Oh, my gosh. This is Killian Meehan of Medieval Armored Combat Ireland. These guys are no joke. They dress up in full plate armor. They have real weapons, and they smash the living shit out of each other. Shit you not, I've seen some video of it online. And these guys are not kidding around, to the point in which I'm not sure how they don't sustain serious skeletal injury. Metal aside, sure. You know, you have some metal on there, you avoid, hopefully, you know, edged injury, lacerations, Toby.
Yeah, absolutely. They beat the hell out of one another, and I'm really excited. And if you're interested in finding out what's going to go on, you know, write in a question about how the hell you beat the hell out of each other.
Yeah, with a sword while you're wearing full plate mail. And send your questions, comments to at Unfixed Radio here on Twitter, which is your number one way to get in touch with us. Our producer Nina is with our guest and some company in the green room, and she'll be sending your questions on to Toby and I, so we can pass them on to our guest, and that's coming up later in the show.
Yeah.
You know, so Toby, you know, we have this intro segment that we've been kind of nurturing, right?
Yeah, on and off.
It's called the typical topical banter, and it's called that because of one little word slip the first time we did the show together. You were trying to say topical banter.
Yeah, but
it's like topical, like on topic, like, you know, the news program or something. Like, you know what, you know, current events.
Yeah, like the exact kind of things that we normally talk about.
Topical.
Right.
This is how we do it. So I understand that, Toby, today, like, it's almost turning into a dark medieval history segment, the thing that you've been doing a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a huge history buff, so I sort of like these fantastic stories. I mean, you can either talk about the stories from the last year, the last 5 years, or the last 2,000 years.
Yeah. And when was shit really interesting?
I don't know, probably about 1,500 years ago to 1,000 years ago, but it's always interesting.
There was the gas shortage in the U.S. as well. Do you remember that? Do you remember hearing about that? The Carter administration?
You mean what, in the 1960s?
Yes.
No, I don't remember this.
No, me neither. But come on, in terms of topical banter, what are we going to talk about? The gas shortage and the lines? You know, the even odd, the system in which they use is if your license plate number ended in an odd number, you got to go on given days, and if it ended in an even number, then you went on other days.
I thought you were going to say if you had an odd number, then you got to go to Vietnam.
Yeah, that's how the draft worked. You know, that's super funny, seeing as my dad was in Vietnam.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Now I feel real bad.
Okay, he was never the same.
Did he win?
I think you know goddamn well what happened in Vietnam, Toby. That's not funny. God bless my country. God bless America. God bless these United States.
I'd make a trumpet sound, but I don't think it'd work.
Don't say the word Trump anywhere fucking near me right now, my friend. Uh-huh. So, right, these kind of like dark, like last time, if you listened to the show, we talked about the actual fighting pits. We brought a story in which men had a conflict with their wives. They would bring, they would actually fight with these pins, like something like a bowling pin.
Trial by combat, yeah, right. Yeah.
Sure, but the men, in order to put them at a disadvantage, would be buried up to their waist.
Yeah, that's right, and they had some rocks and sacks.
Yeah, rocks and sacks, like us. So that was last time. I thanks very much for listening last time, if you did. We're back for Unfix the Redemption, V2.0. And tonight, Toby, I understand you're bringing a tale of what century? What
19th century, technically. I mean, it's the Napoleonic War.
19th century France.
Yeah. Well, 19th century England, even. But
whatever.
I mean, you know, the Napoleonic War. It was this great battle. There was Napoleon. Oh my God!
Sorry, I apologize.
So there was a big war between the French and the English, and it happened around about 1810, and so it was there was this sort of, it went on for a long time. Napoleon ended up ruling most of Europe, but there was a small story that happened that I thought was really interesting, and it happened in the coastal town of England called Hartlepool. Mm-hmm. It's a fair distance from the coast of France. And what happened was, you know, they're on the coast, and a big storm comes up, and you know, some eagle-eyed person during the storm sees out in the distance there's a ship out near the rocks on the coast, and the wind's blowing the ship onto the coast, and they're a bit concerned for these guys because they know that their coast is deadly, and so the town runs out to make sure to see if they can save any people. But another eagle-eyed person notices that this ship has French colors flying, a French flag, and so they're like, oh, this is the enemy, and so the storm dashes the ship upon the rocks, and no one survives, or they think no one survives. As they're sifting through the wrack that washes up off of the ocean onto the seaside, they find one little man dressed in a French military uniform. In hindsight, it was probably a mascot for the ship. It was a monkey wearing a little miniature French uniform. But the locals of Hartlepool, being yokels, country hicks, they didn't know what a Frenchman looked like, and said they were pretty sure that this monkey was a Frenchman.
They could identify their flag, but they'd never seen a French.
It's unbelievable. I mean, there's no photographs at this time, so they had to do their best.
So they had, like, what, illustrations of the flag?
Or they knew the colours, at least.
Yeah, good old red, white, and blue.
Yeah, yeah, and they went the other way. They went sideways. The tricolour.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. The stand-up-y one, we call it. The stand-up-y one. The American one. So they capture a French soldier.
A Frenchman, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so they're at war. And you know what you do with the other side when you're at war.
Depending, you abide by the Geneva Convention.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, had the Geneva Convention, if it existed.
You clothe them.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the nice thing to
do. Tend to their wounds.
I think the more likely was you'd pick up your pitchforks and you'd march to the town square and pretty much they sentenced this Frenchman to death.
Yeah. Well, sure. I can totally understand.
Yeah, and
you know, shit you not.
It's there's no decapitation or execution these days. I mean, there's no decapitation these days, so what you do is you hang people.
Okay.
So they had this French man.
Right.
They had a great difficulty hanging him because he kept on running up the rope and using his tail to climb up the rope. Right. So it's difficult apparently to hang a monkey.
Yeah. So then what happened?
Well, eventually they got it done, apparently.
Right.
Just pull on
his little monkey feet.
Yeah, I guess they tied him. I don't want to know.
It's by a bit the tail sort of, and pulled him down.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe
that part of the legend is so shockingly missing. I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah. It is just legend now. But
how does this rate on your bullshit rate or your validity scale? 10 being perfectly accurate and 1 being complete and utter prose and legend.
I don't know. I think it's about 4.
A 4. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Work with 4.
There's been some sort of hysterical events that have happened afterwards. At one point, a bone washed up on the shore, and the members of the town found the bone and they marched up, you know, pronouncing that this was a bone from the Hartlepool monkey.
And this was when was this?
It's like the 1960s.
So how? So this is, you said the 19th century, and so that's the 1800s, right?
Yeah.
And then so 160 years later, they find a bone. And yeah, they presume this certainly must be related to that crazy thing with the
And it's like a foot and a half long.
Mistaken French mascot.
Yeah, yeah. It turns out to be a cow's bone. So this is why we're 4 on the scale here.
Okay.
But I mean, I think the thing that I want to sort of wrap up on is now that people from Hartlepool are called monkey hangers. And in fact, their soccer team are called the monkey hangers, and there is
in modern times now,
and in fact, there was even in 2002 there was a guy, Stuart Drummond, who campaigned for the office of mayor of Hartlepool, and what he did was he wore a costume of a French military costume and a tail, and he called himself Angus the monkey.
Wow.
And won.
He won on that campaign. That
yeah,
was
yeah.
His platform.
His election slogan was "Free bananas for school children."
You're fucking with me.
No. He's been re-elected twice.
When was this now?
2002.
Bullshit. Really?
No, really, really.
You can Google this, you're saying.
Yep, yep.
I can find this on any reputable news source like Google.com.
Well, you can find it on the internet.
Right. Jesus Christ. What's the takeaway from this one here? Like, where do we wind up? What have we learned is really what I guess I'm looking for.
It's really cultural people who were idiotic in the past.
1800s, I guess. We've never seen a French. So this dude with the tail is clearly a French guy.
Or an ape on board sort of ships that have cannons, you need sort of gunpowder. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is particularly the weapon of choice in sailing ships during the Napoleonic War. And often they would have, you know, when you're the very youngest type of sailor, you are called a powder monkey because you bring the gunpowder to the cannons.
Right.
So it's suspected that another interpretation might be that this was not a monkey. This was, in fact, a small child, a boy. That they had,
hung by the neck. Which kind of confuses the why it was. He was just, you know, the hand on hand climbing up the rope. That's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. That's in one of the songs about the.
There's songs.
There's a song. Yeah, yeah. You can look this one up.
Yeah. Do we want to hear the song?
I don't know. I mean, we could possibly tune it in
with
for the
Hartleford monkey
later on.
Spell that for me. Hartleford. Sorry, apologies. So, all right. So, the monkey hanging. What does Sympathy for the Devil Fatboy Slim remix have to do with the monkeys?
I just like that song.
Okay. Right. All right. So, the monkey hanging legend, Hartlepool, Hartlepool. Right?
Yeah, and I also put a YouTube link on there for you to download. Right. But we can look into that later if you
Yeah,
know.
Certainly. Hey, let's come back to it, because Toby, I want if it's okay with you to play some word association.
Okay.
You know this game, right? So I say milk and you say fat. So the first, I think you said fat because you were looking at me, not because that's what milk reminds you of. You're just
you know, milk fat, you know. Yeah,
I'm like, and then I say brick and you go American. So, right. So I want to play word association with you, Mr. Hallam.
Mm.
Okay, it's actually two words. So phrase association, I suppose, but I'm hoping you to come back with one word from my phrase, okay?
Oh, okay.
Okay, so when I say backstreet, finish that phrase, backstreet blank.
Gotta say boys.
Right. So most smart people would go there. Most intelligent, learned men would go there. But no, in this case, it's backstreet Botox, Toby.
Ah, right.
Illicit Botox. Right. In my hands, ladies and gentlemen, I have the latest issue of the Wicklow Times. I'm your Southeast Ireland hookup, okay? So we've got a story about illicit clandestine Botox labs, all right? So non-surgical cosmetic treatments such as Botox and injectable fillers, Toby, are big business, thanks in part to their prevalence among celebrities on social media, right? I think we're talking about Kardashians.
Are they buying this Botox or, like, brewing it themselves?
Yeah, so sure, we'll get there. So it's been apparently sources, and there's no sources isn't quoted and it's not explained. I think actually the author of the story got some fucked up illegal Botox and said, hey, you know, let's write an article. Sources claim that there's illegal bullshit Botox. And they're going down. You know, you fucked with the wrong guy. I run the editorial board of the Wicklow Times. Normally, these are prescription only, Toby, but they're getting them off the internet.
Wow.
Now, they're being shipped by regular shipping methods instead of the specialist methods needed to ensure the integrity of the product. So they're spoiling and getting all wacky. You know what I'm saying?
This Botox gone off.
So, you know, that Botox is botulinum. Right, and paralyzes muscles. And
botulin?
Yeah, so people put it, thank you. You know, you could work for a tabloid right now. I think you get a job down with the Star.
I can rhyme.
So, yeah, Botox is regulated, but you know what isn't? Injectable fillers. So there's legislation on the books. There's no statutory requirements as regards to the administration of the injectable fillers, but there is increasing calls to regulate them.
Is it where you inject fucking, you know,
I don't inject
rubber into your face, silicone or
effectively,
something.
Effectively, I think. I don't know silicone. I think that's, you know, highly cancerous, so that's not going to work.
Mm.
So most people use it to get rid of wrinkles and things like this. And after these little surgeries go wrong, many people turn to licensed practitioners to fix it, right? But it turns out those people are getting turned away from the licensed practitioners just because they're like, no, I don't know.
So if you are a licensed practitioner, this is a real niche job that you could get into.
Fake Botox Repair.org.
Like the tattoo removalists.
Yeah, the ists. sure. Yeah. So they have to wait it out up to 6 months, Toby. And what could generally happen is facial disfigurement.
Depression.
Sometimes facial asymmetry. Okay. Hold on, I'm going to do my public duty here. So anyone out there, members of the public, can report any suspicious activity to the HPRA's enforcement section on 01-634-3436 or report case at hpra.ie. That's what's happening down in Wicklow, Toby.
So if you see the fucking elephant man walking down the street, talk to those guys.
If you see an editor for a local newspaper with an asymmetrical face, then I think we know who's writing these articles.
Because don't make fun of them.
No. I think the next article on the front page of Wicklow Times is going to be like, bullshit pizza delivery driver comes fucking late as hell, you know?
Totally 45 minutes.
I think she might be abusing her position just a pinch. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know. Toby, I'm getting a bit pensive and thoughtful.
Really?
You know? Yeah, well, I received a voicemail earlier.
Oh, really?
I did.
You get a lot of those.
I get a lot, but, you know, and so as you know, I deliberately dodge calls from a particular person who lives in the U.S., my book publisher.
Yeah.
So he calls me, and I see the number, and I just let it go to voicemail, and then I take these voicemails, I record them, and then I play them here on the air for the Unflix listeners. Toby.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he's still calling.
I've heard this one, and so I've got some thoughts on the topic. We can debrief. Right. After we talk about this,
I'm excited to hear what he has to say.
So yeah, I've got a voicemail from my publisher. I'm going to play it on the air for everybody here, and there you go, my publisher here on Unfixed.
Adam, well, this is your publisher, Adam. I've been trying to get in touch with you through a phone number that I got from your brother, since you won't answer your personal phone there. Apparently, it's your office number, Adam, but I've been getting the runaround there, okay? First, I wound up in a phone loop, which took me half an hour to escape, and then I got passed around between a few unusual characters, okay, like such as the one I'm about to play for you now, because I recorded some of my calls there, Adam, because what's going on, okay? I'm just listen here.
Well, hello there. I'm calling for Adam Jensen.
Adam Jensen? Oh my!
I was given this phone number, and I was told I could reach Adam there. Have you seen him?
Are you an Adam Jensen fan, too? He's so unpredictable.
Well, he certainly is unpredictable there. I guess you could call me a fan. I'm his publisher.
Do tell.
I've been his publisher for about a decade now, maybe longer, and I'm just trying to reach him. I've never been able to speak with him before.
But go to New Jersey with my grandmother.
Actually, I just really want to talk to Adam.
Guess what's for dinner? Spaghetti and meatballs!
I've enjoyed spaghetti before. But what I really want to know is this the office of Adam Jensen?
Is what the office of Adam Jensen? We're on the telephone together!
Adam. Now, is that how it is in your office there? Mind you, this was after a man who spoke in total monotone, and another man who just laughed, low and smoky-like, okay? Nobody was able to put me through to you at all, and I needed to talk to you about the book, Adam, because I'm finding some problems as I move forward, and I'm going to mention a couple of them right now, okay? It's a little bit of a mixed bag there, Adam, in terms of the purpose and theme, the book. You know, before you were talking about the human mind and dating and all that, which can be related, you know, and it felt like it was related. But then it moves on to several confusing things. It seems to me dangerous and possibly illegal to combine an Uber ride with a nanny service there. Let me just get it straight. When you need a sitter, you just call up a driver using the app. And a guy pulls up, and you load your kids into the car there, And then they ride all night with the strange man down by the airport and the bar district looking for other riders there. I mean, I can see how it's taking advantage of an existing system, okay, sort of piggybacking it on there. But I don't know. It just seems legally maybe we shouldn't broach that that particular idea. It just seems a little bit dangerous there. Okay. You have sensory enhancement ideas here, Adam. Cyborg types of things. It's an interest of yours, yeah. You say in the future that we'll become integrated with our technologies. Now, we all know about infrared vision and hypersonic hearing already and things like that. But, you know, I'm just confused, Adam. What would be the point of being able to perceive sunspots in real time by implanting a ring of micro LEDs into the eye, which will connect through an app to a space weather data site? What benefit there will we people get from being able to perceive sunspots in real time? Yeah, and can you turn this off while driving is another question that I have there. Okay, you suggest a cochlear implant, which is interesting there. That's what Rush Limbaugh has in his head so that he can hear. After the drugs that he did, and other people have it. I know a guy who has that. But this one would emit a steadily rising tone as your hair grows, so that you know when it's time to get a haircut. That's interesting, Adam. But I'm not sure what the tinnitus community is going to say about that one. And the musical scale ends at G and not H. Okay, what you say you can eat various things you didn't suspect. You say here in another section. I wanted to take a closer look at that. Dandelion seeds, Adam. You say the fuzzy white things once collected can be used as a topping. Well, that's pretty unusual there, Adam. Is that true? Is my main question. But then again, I've eaten some pretty unusual things at my trendy New York book meetings there. Just last night, I actually shared a plate of smoked bees with Michio DeGrasse Kaku there. Okay. Finally, Adam, I just wanted to talk to you about the chapter that you've called Satan in My Bathroom. It's an interesting title. But the full text of the chapter, Adam, is simply contact Dan Reed and a phone number. Who is that, Adam? I don't know what to say about that. Okay, well, you know, I'm going to try to contact you again tomorrow through the phone labyrinth there again. I just really want to, you know, talk about the book, Adam. So I hope to speak to you soon, and I'll talk to you soon, I guess.
Right, so my nervous, wacky publisher leaves his voicemails. Apparently,
he's nervous. I think he's constantly on the verge of having a stroke.
Yeah, you read his demeanor as being like in a constant fit.
I think he's very sick.
I think he's just wound up.
Yeah, that's possible.
A Toby? Yeah. You know? Like, so, yeah, the one thing he got through to where I work. So he says, and he had Wally Gator apparently on the telephone. The Hanna-Barbera cartoon character answered his call, which he recorded. I'm actually thinking maybe this is a subtle dig from my publisher to me that he's pissed off. He's gotten kind of maybe wind that I'm not picking up the calls all the time. And he's like, I can't get you on the phone. Like, this feels like a bit of a stunt. And maybe he's communicating weird. Or maybe that was just someone at the office, but
Maybe he's found some way of finding the phone numbers of Hanna-Barbera characters.
I'm torn between two possibilities. One of which is he's fucking with me, right? And saying, like, you don't get on the phone with me. I'm going to leave, you know, this bizarre email saying, like, you know, making a statement. I don't know the guy's sense of humor. He seems a bit unbalanced, shall we say. The other is that he's lost his mind and he called a completely different wrong number and someone started fucking with him, Toby. So someone, like, we get this guy on the phone, he's all twitchy, and they just start fucking with him.
I'm really hoping for the latter.
Yeah, no, I do worry about the man. You know?
But if you could call a Hanna-Barbera character, which one would you choose?
If I could call any one of them? See, I'm not a massive fan of the series. What are my options?
I don't know. There's the Jetsons, there's no. Muttley and Gottlieb, no. There's the Flintstones.
No.
Starting to run out of
that's the reason I'm not a fan.
Right,
of
okay, so Hanna-Barbera, cheap animation, fuck those guys.
Yeah, basically. I don't know. Is this from where they got, like, the Space Ghost animation cells, like all that stuff?
Yeah, I think we're on the same track.
They stole all that stuff. I talked to Space Ghost, the new one, though, or Brack.
Brack?
Brack is a Space Ghost character from
the... Oh, right, not like the current president of the United States.
Tell
He's
me,
not a Hanna-Barbera character.
No, wait, Brack. Oh, Barack. No, Brack, B-R-A-K. Brack Obama. Toby, I noticed something. I was in the shower earlier today, as is my wont.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized something, man. I do a top-down wash. You know, like, if you're going to clean a surface, you'd start at the top so that the dirty water flows down. You would never start cleaning the bottom.
That's a sensible strategy.
And then moving up. But I think I might actually do it religiously. Like, I think I have a set routine. I always thought I was, you know, I thought I was playing jazz in the shower. I thought I was just, like, just slinging, shooting from the hip. But I realized today, as I actually noticed what I was doing, step back, stop thinking about my weird fantasies in which I'm fighting dinosaurs, and think about what I'm actually doing in the actual shower. And what I believe is that it's a very meticulous head, armpits down to the problem areas and the other, you know, where the other limbs join, and then basically that's about it. I just spot clean, and I do top to bottom.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a much more sensible strategy than me.
Which is your what is your shower?
I'm pretty much crotch first.
I think you just can't keep your hands off your itchy genitalia. You know, you just need to rub it up against something or something like that.
Yeah,
it needs to rub up against something, or you need to rub something up against it.
Onanism, I think, is the word.
Onanism?
Yeah, self-love.
Like to own oneself, almost? Like,
not sure root.
I think
that's the word.
Stupid pronunciation for one-ism. One-ism.
It could be. I mean, I've only ever read it, so that's always the danger.
Yeah, stay off Reddit. Reddit's bullshit. thank you. Thank you for the courtesy. Giggle. I appreciate that. Eurovision's coming up, Toby. Are you looking forward to your Eurovision finals on Saturday?
I'm looking at getting astonishingly drunk on Saturday and then telling everybody in Australia about the Eurovision before they get to see it.
On Twitter, which you're going to join because your brilliance gets just into the ether of Facebook. If you were to tweet these brilliant little quips you'd come up with, the Twitter would be a happier place to hang out. And I really wish you'd think about that.
I think Twitter is the sort of application of choice. You'll have to bury me in the grave.
You can be at crotch first.
Ooh. Yeah. That might have been the best way you've ever sold it.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Yeah, no, that you're like, no. I could be at crotch first. I'm in.
If it's not taken.
Toby, I don't know how your short-term memory is doing these days, but I don't know if you remember, just very recently, we got a chance to go out on the Ghost Walk.
Northside Ghost Walk.
Yeah, Northside Walking Ghost Walk Tour. And we're actually hoping to have our tour guide as a guest maybe next time. We're in contact. We're hoping to have her on a future show. Upon doing so, we are out, and we took the opportunity to revive the segment that's called Going for a Walk. It's this idea in which we take the show out of the studio. We get out of the normal confines of what we do from day to day here, strapped into our mics with the headphones and all that stuff, and we get out on the streets. We take the show to the people. Instead of asking people to come and to us, we just take it to them and show them what we're all about, what we're doing, right?
Yeah, we stretch those withered fetal muscles and get outside.
Yeah, we went for a walk, and we most certainly actually went for a walk. And so we're reviving the segment. Here we are. We got going for a walk. I'm really actually very excited to bring it back. So without any further humming and hawing, we have the Going for a Walk. Now, this features Arno and Anna, Netherland folk. Two folk from the Niederlands, which I learned means underland, sort of. But if you say Unterland, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's pretty rude.
Not allowed.
Apparently Holland's rude as well.
Holland.
It's just a part of the Netherlands.
The rude bit?
I guess. Right. Crotch first.
CF, motherfucker. So, all right, without any, as I said, I'm going to do one more hymn, but no more Hawes. All right, let's do Going for a Walk with Arno and Anna post-Ghost Tour here on Unfixed. Thanks for listening. Oh, if you got any comments, want to be a part of the show at all, hit us up on Twitter at Unfixed Radio, especially when we have our guest, which is coming on shortly. It would be Killian Meehan from Medieval Armored Combat Ireland, which we're all looking forward to. I can't wait to commandeer his weapon and stab at you.
Crutch first!
That's as you do.
I'm going for a walk.
I've forgotten your name again because I'm a horrible person.
My name is Arno.
Spell it for me, please.
A-R-N-O.
Arno. Arno, and you're here with your girlfriend.
Anna.
And spell that for me, please.
A-N-N-E.
So, Anna and Arno.
Yeah.
What do you think of Irish beers?
Of Irish beers?
Yeah, surely. I mean, we've been drinking beers here at a bar for a little while, so what do you think about Irish beers so far?
Well, I'm really happy about how, I'm not sure how to say this in English, but how alive they stay. Like in the Netherlands, like your beer gets tapped with a lot of force. and as a result, you get a lot of foam, and it's really intense, and then it just dies out within a couple of minutes, and this one just keeps on breathing.
It sounds kind of like being a teenager. You just go in there with a lot of force, and then there's a lot of white stuff, and then it's basically over. So he appreciates the long, thick game, it sounds like.
But there is certainly a contrast, you know, between these sort of like foamy lager beers and what you have in England. Do you think there's some kind of you could make some statement about that?
I'm not sure about the English beers. We're from the Netherlands, but...
Yeah, I know you're not from the Netherlands, but you were talking about how there was a lot of foam, but this is too much foam for you?
No. We used to have foam on our beers. So when we went to England, we missed the foam, and right now in Dublin we see a lot of foam, and that's very welcome. Yeah.
So there has been a strong argument about whether you have sort of post-fermentation in beers and you have like a lager-like beer. And this is something that I see quite traditionally in Europe, and I see quite traditionally in Ireland, but not in the UK. So I wanted to sort of say, do you think this adds something to the beers that you drink? If you have foam on a beer, that's kind of exciting. But do you think that's important to have foam on a beer? Does it add to the flavor of it?
I guess it looks more alive and fresh and chilled when it has foam on the beer. But and if you don't have foam anymore, we think it's just been standing there for half an hour and nobody touched it. And so I
guess... not so much about the foam. Like, the foam is the visual thing that comes out of it, but it's about the bubbles inside of the beer. You know, the sparkles, the... I'm not sure what the...
And the carbonated stuff in the beer. And but in the Netherlands, we use really oxygen... No, it's not oxygen. How do you call it?
Carbon dioxide or nitrogen.
It'd be really exciting if someone knew what we were talking about. So, I'd like to say, it seems that my girlfriend and I have been proposing that we each wear each other's deodorant. How do you feel about your girlfriend's deodorant or scent?
It's really good.
That's terrible. So can we go on and say a little bit more about how you feel it makes you feel? Because some people talk about how scents make them remember a time.
All right.
Okay, so in fact, let's keep talking about scents. And so maybe, what's the first scent that you remember about your girlfriend?
She actually wore some different scents when we met, but I'm not sure which one it was. It was something different, though.
Well, before I met him, I had a boyfriend, and he was using the same deodorant as he's...
What?
That's why you like him.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
And I was using the same one myself. But then I tried to use the girly one of that brand. It was awful. And I
pretty much just fooled her. I just saw the deodorant in the guy's closet and I was like...
It's called opportunism in English.
Fishing.
This one works.
Well, I didn't use deodorant for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I moved on to women's deodorant and that's all right.
Your girlfriend had it and you just put it on.
No, I bought it.
Wait, why? What?
Because I felt it would be less flavorsome.
Flavorsome.
I tried licking it and it seemed quite sweet. But I like that flavor.
I'm going for a walk.
Alright, the going for a walk segment, Toby. How'd you feel about that one?
It's dangerous to listen to yourself after you've been on a ghost tour.
Yeah, right. You know what the most fun bit about the ghost tour was? Fucking supernatural shit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why you go on a ghost tour.
Isn't it? Did you feel... Yeah. Well, I think we should save the ghost talk for the time in which we had our tour guide on. As a guest.
And maybe also the pet cemetery.
Yeah. Oh, wait, which pet cemetery?
Isn't that what we do?
We do pet cemetery with the guest.
Yeah.
So sure, you should maybe have a good pet cemetery, but like a supernatural pet cemetery.
Maybe. I mean, that's generally, you know, the sort of overtones.
Right. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Normally it's just, you know, you find the fucking dead cat's body roadside.
Ah.
That's my experience of it.
Right, that's pretty...
You're not a seasoned veteran in terms of the pet cemetery.
No, that's true. They all just seem to be dead pets.
Yeah, well, sure. That's the general gist of it.
I'm always excited by a good narrative, though. So if our guest today could have a really exciting sort of mystic, the banshee pet cemetery, I'd be happy.
You know what that was?
What?
That was a class A segue, my friend. Because we are, I think, gearing up right now to bring in our guest, Cillian Meehan. A medieval armored combat Ireland. We're going to bring him in here. He's brought some gear, I'm told. My producer Nina has told us that he brought in some goddamn weapons. And I'm just going to smash the second.
Fuck,
I get the
yeah.
Yeah. So I've got shit ton. I really do have a lot of questions for our man Cillian. He's very gracious coming up all the way from Carlo today to talk to us about the armored combat and on. So, we'll have him in. And, again, field your questions. Unfixed Radio on Twitter, @ Unfixed Radio. I got to find out different ways to say without any further delay. You got any ones?
Coming up next,
Cillian Meehan of Medieval Armored Combat, the Irish team, the Irish national team. Toby, this is a real goddamn sport. This isn't some people fucking around. Like, this is, like...
International... level sport. Is this going to be in the Olympics? Is this going to be, you know, the World Cup of hitting each other with pieces of metal and wood? Right. I don't know.
We're going to find out. So we'll be back in just a moment with our guest. Alrighty, and we're back, and we've brought our guest in, Toby. I'm fucking excited. Our friend, our new friend, Cillian Meehan. Am I saying your last name right, Cillian?
You definitely are, yeah, that's right, Meehan. Right.
Meehan.
Yeah.
Meehan.
And you bought my friendship with a burrito, so you're forever my friend now. Yeah.
Right, that's all it takes to win the loyalty of... I'm sorry, what part of Ireland are you from?
I'm from Cork.
Cork. A Corkman's loyalty is actually bought by via burrito. Now, that
yeah,
might be...
It's a long story. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, we've got nothing but time here, Cillian. So, sure.
I've got some more interesting stories, though.
Speaking of, just not to jump into the material too quick, but I did notice that your shield, I recognize that as a Cork seal, and that I taught at UCC, Cillian.
Yeah, it's that's the traditional Cork symbol. So it's two red towers, and it's either flanking a harbour, and there's a ship going up the middle, so it's right. a safe passage for ships.
I saw that on the website. So look, I have a habit as an interviewer of getting into the material far too quickly, right? So I just need to bring it back. I need to rein myself in. Don't be pulling my reins, goddammit.
Well, there was a spectacle here as some of our unfixed helpers brought in a veritable armory of equipment here. There are gloves, helmets, and the shield that was just mentioned now.
Yeah, we got all kinds of wacky medieval shit, and there's dents on the helmets. I'm nothing but interested. I'm nothing if but interested.
So what's the kind of thing that you do when you get together? I mean, you know, how do you start one of these gatherings of armored sword fighting men?
Well, there's the training aspect, obviously, very important, and just to use Facebook as a method of gathering people together for that. We have the World Championships coming up in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, Portugal, I'm told.
In Portugal.
So I've read.
That's true, yeah. You've done your homework.
Yeah, so, yeah, not much, but yeah, a bit. So you're traveling to Portugal for the World Championships.
Yep.
Tell me a tiny bit about the World Championships, please, in terms of, like, how does one identify as a... Do you have to register with a body? Is there an overseeing body?
It works differently in every country, but this
there's
is...
no international body, there's no FIFA of armored combat.
There is the IMCF, which is the International Medieval Combat Federation.
Okay.
Very official sounding. And that is a group of countries, about 23 countries, 24 I think, right. Who agree to the specific set of rules and send people to the World Championships and have their own tournaments in their own countries, right. Keep it going all around the world, yeah.
Right.
We also have, there's Battle of the Nations, which is predates IMCF.
Right.
Battle of the Nations is run by the HMB, who is the Historic Medieval Battle. So there's two different worldwide organizations.
Board, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think maybe, you know, as I said, I tend to just like plunge in head first here. So I think maybe we can bring it back to the beginning. So there's two beginnings as far as I know. The beginning of the sport, maybe, mm-hmm. and also your beginning into the sport, sure. personally. So maybe we should start with the sport itself.
Definitely, yeah.
We were talking pre-show just for a moment. I think you mentioned something about the Ruskies.
The Ruskies, they're mad bastards, yeah.
Mad.
So the sport's been going, I would say, informally in many ways for about 20 years in Eastern Europe and Russia. And it's just in the last, I think it was 2009 it began as the HMB, as the first kind of international body.
Sorry, HMB is once again for me, please. I'm a little bit
Historic Medieval Battle.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
great.
So
sorry to interrupt you there, but like, is this more like, you know, not a recreational, but you know, people recreate, tell me what's that called, historical reenactment.
Reenactment.
Is yeah, that what we're talking
that,
about?
That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, reenactment.
That's a totally
usually,
different strain from what I'm seeing on the web right now. People are not reenacting shit. They're going for blood.
That's the one thing. There is no choreographing, and there's no blows pulled.
This isn't pro wrestling.
It's fairly far from cosplay, then.
I can show you how far from cosplay it is if you want to put on the helmet. And
yeah, we'll get there. I have no doubt that Toby wants to put
it. It's a good chastising threat, but I will wear the helmet.
Toby, okay. I generally grind right on Toby's helmet, so... Look, so this is not, all right, just to make this quite clear, this is not dressing up for kicks.
No.
Well, although it sounds fairly fun to put on some plate mail. You know, ever since I was a child, I must admit, knights, you know, more than space. I think people maybe have a genre, you know, there's cowboy people, there's like, you know, kung fu people, there's space alien people, and then there's like medieval knights and castle folk, isn't there?
Astronauts, firemen.
There's a few, but I think deep down, if you cut through the layers of the onion, everyone's a medieval knight on the inside.
Wow.
It's very appealing. Yeah.
I'll avoid saying knight because there's... Right.
No king
again,
in
it's
Ireland.
Not, none of us are knights. We're obviously...
there's no king in Ireland.
Because there's no more kings. No,
yeah,
there
so
used to be
how
four.
The hell does one like you become a knight? You have to be a goddamn Paul McCartney, you know, Union Jack ass kisser singing about yesterday, all your troubles and bullshit in order to become a knight. You're out there walking the walk.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney's getting a sword tapped on his shoulder. That's some bullshit.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
I'm calling him out right now.
We all feel pretty bitter. Paul, if you want to come in here, we can settle this man to man.
Fuck you, Paul McCartney.
Or maybe go to some bankrupt Eastern European country that's just fucking giving him away.
You can do that, too.
Well, they're giving away the pain as well, because they're the guys who are really into the sport, honestly.
A high level of competition.
Yeah. So in places like Russia, specifically, it's a job. It's a full-time job. These people are...
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So they're professionals, sportsmen and women, sports people, if you will, and they
sports
get paid to...
I'm American, I know about
sports
this shit.
Persons.
Sports persons.
Damn it. I was nearly right. PC Brigade will get me.
Fun police have arrived.
So there are those who do get paid there. I mean, the Russia team won if they and team two and three and so on. If they win professional fights, then they get paid. And if they lose them, then they kind of have to find a way of getting home, usually by selling their armor.
Wow.
Yeah.
No shit. True story.
Yeah, true story. I mean, that's not always the case, but definitely.
Sure, but that happened.
That does happen. And that's how I got some of my first gear, was off of a Ukrainian guy who.
Crazy.
Who, that's awesome. He just needed some money to get home. I was like,
insane.
I'll give you $200 for that. That's fine.
It's although essentially they get paid for fighting, so this is ultimately mercenary work.
Well, again, that's just Russia. I mean, pretty much the rest of the world, it is. I won't say it's a hobby, but it is. It's not professional. It's a sport in the same way that you know, if you look at hurling in Ireland, for example, that it's played at a very high level.
You don't get
but
paid,
it's
though.
But you don't get paid. Right. Like I said, I mean, the sport in Ireland, we'll say, started about 2012. A guy named Brendan Griffin went over, saw the World Championships, the HMB at the time, Battle of the Nations, and he was captivated by it. It was like, I need to bring this back to Ireland. So he came back. He's a well-known reenactor in Ireland, but I mean, he knows his swordsmanship as well.
Okay.
Does some HEMA, which is historic European martial arts. Be familiar with that sort of thing. So he wanted to bring it back, and he wanted to get an Irish team started. So that was back in 2012. In 2013, I went with him to France to see the World Championships there.
Cool.
And was hooked as well.
Yeah.
And it kind of went from there, and it grew from there. And we that's when the IMCF started, and we're founding members of the IMCF, the International Medieval Combat Federation. So we have a say basically in how the sport develops, in how the rule set develops, which is important, which we didn't really have as much with HMB. We wanted to, it's historical, so there is a historical aspect to it. Mm-hmm. But there's also the sports aspect to it. It is very, as I said, it's very competitive, so you can't just the fully historical side of things would be the more reenactment maybe.
Right.
Whereas this is you're fighting to win.
Yeah, so I wondered about that specifically, and that saying, like, you know, you make a sport out of it. So, like, take a shield, for example. Would you put, like, a padding or any kind of, like, modern materials in there to absorb a blow so that a person that doesn't want to break their arm can actually fight with, like, a big axe and do this in full force? Or is this really all using traditional materials and is accurate down to the last link?
You have to give some consideration for safety, obviously.
Yeah, we don't want to, yeah.
You don't want anyone dying. So, but at the same time, it's actually, you'd be surprised at how accurate it can be and how accurate it is. It's sport in its infancy. We're still, you know, making mistakes and everything, but
it's goddamn ironic for a medieval sport.
I know. We're reviving it and we're just...
Starting
from scratch again. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, this is all steel. There's no titanium. There's no, like, weapons-grade stuff here other than, just basic steel.
So
there's,
I couldn't incorporate...
It's all metal. There's no polymers. There's
carbon
fiber.
No.
Or...
You can wear a cup. There's some concessions. So you can wear... You can wear a cup. I do. You can also wear stuff like gum shield, things like that. But your primary protection is your padding and your armor. So... Well, the padding's part of the armor, but the external part, which is the steel, mostly, yeah.
I thought it might be interesting to sort of talk about the personal experience of it, and maybe a training session, or maybe actually more exciting when you go and have one of these competitions, contests.
Sure.
I mean, you know, what's your experience with that, like suiting up and going out there and fighting? I mean, can you take us through that?
It's a real adrenaline rush. So, I mean, there's a lot of camaraderie, and it's a real... you're meeting a lot of old friends when you go there. Friends who are going to kick your ass and whose ass you're also going to kick. But, I mean, you leave that for the field. Off the field, you know, as you were saying, they're getting suited up and everything. When you're kind of immersed in a relatively medieval environment, the anticipation, you know, it really kills you. It's like...
Do you have, like, separate tents that you get your armor on when you're sort of... when you're combatants and you have your friends putting it on for you and...
Some events, they're held in sports halls, you know, for the local events, we'll say.
The GA Hall.
The GA Hall, we... exactly. Or... let's keep it international, but yeah. But we actually... We do train and fight up in Claregalbe Castle as well. So we do have our own castle. Not everyone's so fortunate.
No shit.
It's pretty nice.
How are we going to just breeze by that? Sorry, where is your castle? You mentioned you all have a goddamned castle.
We're permitted to use a castle for violence and...
Holy
related
God.
Things, yeah. Claregalbe. It's up near Galway.
Right, no shit.
And Eamon is the owner of the castle, and he's painstakingly renovating it to its original glory.
It's nothing short of GD amazing.
And we've had a tournament there last year. We're having another tournament there this year. But to go in, I was saying the personal experience. Sorry, need to drink some beer here.
Just to give you a preview, Killian, I you know, in the theme of medieval, you know, access or just like going back to old styles, I mentioned to you via email that I brew my own mead.
You did mention that. I've yet to see it.
I have a small amount. I have a sampling. We'll break that out.
Yeah, rationing it. That's okay.
Yeah. Small, I pour small sips of my precious nectar.
But, okay. So, you're suiting up. I was saying the anticipation, the adrenaline rush is, it's really, it's like nothing else.
Do me a favor, walk us through, like, a day in actual, say, like, a smaller, like, local tournament. Or not necessarily tournament, whatever, an event, whatever you...
Yeah, so you have
show up around, what, 10?
Earlier than that, just to get everything going, probably 9.
This is
9.
Not a drinking man's sport.
No, not until afterwards. So yeah, you show up 9. The fighting might not start for till, as you said, 10. But you need to. You have referees. You have the scorekeepers if it's duels. So I'll get into that in a minute. And you have you have your medics on standby, obviously. And because accidents do happen, as much as we try and avoid them.
Man, you're hitting somebody else with a double-handed axe, and you're like, oops, an accident occurred.
An accident, yeah, nice pun, I liked it. But yeah, so...
That's my American accent.
You gotta get suited up, as you say, which takes probably half an hour, usually, and...
So do you have a squire?
No, we just help each other out.
You squire each other.
We squire each other. We're squires for hire. So.
Well, not long.
Yeah, so it's getting suited up takes about half an hour. And then you fights. There's duels, which is 1v1. We have those in long sword and shield, or pole arm, which is about a 6-foot hafted axe. Something like that, but longer. Right. I'm gesturing at a mean-looking axe.
Bitchin'.
And that's points-based. It's kind of like... it's like boxing, we'll say.
Can you please walk me slowly a tiny bit through that, actually how it works? So you guys are facing off, right?
Yeah, so you've suited up.
Let's call it sword and shield, two guys.
Sword and shield, two guys. All right.
So I slap at you and you block that with your shield. Is that worth anything?
No. So you have to have a clean strike on the person, anywhere on their body, really.
Foot will count.
Foot does not count.
Foot does not count?
No. Because...
Calf? I'm a calf man.
You're a calf man. You like a well-turned calf. you're allowed to hit those. Back of the knee doesn't count.
Okay.
Groin is definitely discouraged.
Is that for safety, Killian? The back of the knee?
It is for safety. Right. Yeah. So the
slice some tendons up in here.
One of the original rules, poorly translated into English, was no pricks with weapons. But that's
violating that rule.
That does. That gets violated. In so what we say is there's no stabbing. But this is actually totally historical. It's totally historical.
The dueling,
little stabbing.
For judicial duels, no. But for what we're doing, which is tournament based, we're not reenacting battles. We're not reenacting judicial duels, people killing each other. We're not reenacting anything, I suppose, really. But what we're doing is we're recreating...
A fighting style, I guess.
It's tournament combat.
Right.
And tournament combat, like as I said, there was King René d'Anjou, 15th century, no stabbing, rebated edges, so there's 2mm edges on all the weapons.
2mm blunt edge.
2mm. It's blunt, but it'll
call it blunt as such.
It's not sharp, because it doesn't need to be, because it's mostly percussive force.
You won't cut your finger, but swing that at somebody and they're going to bruise
pretty
good.
You can break bones pretty easily. Certainly. With those, even with the single-handed weapons.
Right.
So you can swing at each other, clean hits count, and otherwise if you disarm them or knock them to the ground, that counts as well.
Last time we sort of we had the show, I was talking about certain medieval fights, and there were all of these medieval fighting manuals that were written from the 11th to the 16th, in fact, to the 18th century, where people were talking about
Absolutely.
Particular fighting styles and things like that. But you were talking about how certain blows are not allowed. So is there some kind of difference between the what I want to get at is in the modern styles, and there's modern training techniques and modern interpretations of fighting. How much do you think that shifted on from how it might have been done on the fields of gold with Henry VIII and blah, blah, blah?
Nice example. So
keep it, like, people like me that don't know this shit up to
so
speed.
Really, really cool ass armor that was all enclosed. Really,
it was gilded.
Kind of 16th, more, well, I suppose, yeah, I think it's early 16th century.
Yeah.
The historians might correct me.
Yeah, we bust balls here. We get tweets like
so
crazy.
The HEMA, so which is the historic European martial arts people who would study the things like Lichtenauer or these masters of old, it's somewhat removed from this. Because, again, a lot of that was what's, not to get technical, but called Blossfechten, which is unarmored combat.
Is that German?
It is German. And
no big deal.
Whereas we're fighting in armor, harnisch fechten.
Oh, mein Gott.
I'll try and avoid using too many more German words in it. We're not really recreating any particular style, per se. HEMA people would like to think that we're just bludgeoning each other. I beg to differ. There's a lot of grappling. It's kind of like MMA.
Yeah, but you touched on something. So there's a bit of friction between perhaps the one style and the other one. Not friction as such. But,
well,
you know.
There's again. It's a young sport, and it's gonna rub some people up the wrong way. We're
regularly
trying to we're trying to be as true as possible to the historical. Dueling and you use whatever works. There are only so many things the body can do in terms of mechanics. So if you even look at a lot of the styles, there are some themes which are really repeating. There's only so much, so many ways you can swing a sword to get, optimum power out of it, or to only so many feints you can do, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's only so many ways the body can move. So in a way, I suppose we are doing stuff that is in the manuals, but. Going back to it, it's if you think about MMA, where there's a lot of grappling, kicks, that's what the bow hurt is like, which is the group fights. So right. It's very messy, very chaotic, but you have to have excellent awareness of your surroundings. You have to have very good teamwork, that sort of thing. So you have to train together quite regularly, and make sure that you gel together as a team, and you have your own tactics, because some teams like the US team. They're all huge guys. They're all Marines or ex-Marines. 120 kilos of muscle and anger. And
we don't have kilos in the US.
We have them here though. if we were to put them on a weighing scale here, which is difficult because they're heavy men, but you know, it's possible. that? 200? How many pounds is that? 300. I'm going to say 300 pounds.
In Deutsches Fraulein.
I think it's 2.2 pounds per kilogram. So it's going to be about 300 pounds.
Good lord. I understand the Yanks. Like, fuck, that's heavy.
Yeah. So those guys are big, and their tactics are more like bulldozing. Okay, a lot of the time, not always, but that's basically
broad swords, two hands coming swinging.
People can't see me. You guys can see me. I'm not huge.
Gigantic.
How can they judge those big melee? Yeah. You know, is there enough people to be able to tell if they're appropriate strikes, or is it just whoever falls down?
So for the melee, it's actually I was getting ahead of myself. For the melee, it's if you have 3 points of contact on the ground, you're out.
What the hell does 3 points of contact mean?
Knees and hands.
If you have a knee to the ground, basically you're out.
This is if you get beat the fuck down.
So either you get thrown to the ground or beaten to the ground, or you submit, which I've almost never seen happen. Nobody submits, but
right.
Pride and adrenaline. It's mostly adrenaline because
no, there's no pride on the battlefield. It's all adrenaline.
Well, there's that, but it's I don't want to. It's not really necessarily a macho sport either.
Sorry, not to be abrupt or interrupt too much, but we have a little thing on Twitter here. Our friend Ashling wrote in, and she said she remembers the society in the UCC, that's University College Cork, that they kept their gear down the road from my house.
Yeah.
One guy looked like the guy from Big Giant Swords, whatever the shit that means.
That's the Med and Ren Society, so the Medieval and Renaissance.
Right.
They are a reenactment group, and that's not the same thing as what we do.
It's not the same thing.
It's not. They don't do it as a sport.
Ashling, do a goddamn bit of research before you write into this show, please.
Sorry, Ashling.
I'll bust your balls. It's not your problem.
It is different. As I was saying, it's obviously a full contact sport, but it's an adrenaline rush to be out there, and you don't feel the hits until afterwards a lot of the time. Last year, Brendan Halpin, one of the fighters, he's captain now, sliced open his finger on something. He doesn't know what, but he didn't know until the end of the round when he was like his hand was a bit sticky, and he's like, oh, you know, took off the gauntlet, and there his finger was sliced open. He had to get stitches. And it's just the adrenaline really does kind of make things better in some ways.
I think that's got to be at the heart of the whole thing. There's been this profound element of human life for, well, you know, since we've known other humans that has been fighting one another. And so you know, these wounds and the adrenaline and the way that interacts with us has got to be
it's a very primal feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I wanted to sort of ask you something about, so there was the guy, there was a sword trainer who worked with Basil Rathbone in the 20s and 30s and 40s and Errol Flynn for fencing training, and then he was even still alive to work on the Star Wars trilogy, and he was the one who invented the whole lightsaber format, and then he said that the best natural swordsman he had ever worked with in his career was Viggo Mortensen.
Okay.
And so when you watch films now, how does that feel to you? How do you interpret sword fighting in films?
I try not to get too upset. But for the most part, weapons, and what you'll see a lot in films is that the weapons and armor are really cumbersome and they're swinging and it's all like, you know, very cumbersome, slow, awkward looking stuff.
You get your claymores, you know, your two-handed weapons.
Sure, so. But a claymore is actually a really well-balanced weapon, and it's, you know, for the most part, and that's where one of the guys is a combat archaeologist, and he so he's trying to, this kind of stuff is helping dispel some of the myths about medieval weapons and armor, because people are using replicas of this stuff and they're actually fighting in it, and it gives you a much better understanding of how it works, way better than some museum curator who just lifts this thing and is like, is just like, oh,
they're
wow, no one
break it,
no one could ever, no one could ever swing this. This must have been
this is fake.
Either it's fake, or else they just must. There was no skill involved; that they were just clubbing each other, and that's really not.
If you had to choose a film that did it right,
right? Good question. Take your time, Killian. I've got
a question
from the listening audience as well for you. So
we might go to that one first because I'm going to be a while.
Okay, I don't think you can. Okay, so all right. So a listener asked, "What do you think that the Irish team's chances are in the Portugal tournament, and what?" Are the top teams in the world? It's a two-part question.
Okay, that's a good question. Both of those, actually.
Who's the best, and how are you guys doing? How are you looking? What are your chances in this upcoming tournament?
I think, you know, our chances this year are better than last year because every time we go to these international tournaments...
That's good in general.
We learn something.
Right.
We always learn something. And because we don't have, like, a store knowledge here in Ireland, per se, when we go and we fight, we learn more. And so you have to keep fighting new people.
These dudes have been at it for a long time.
Some of them, yeah. And there's expertise in their countries which we don't have. We brought in, actually, a guy from Poland to teach us in Sword and Shield, specifically. And...
Like
Mr. Miyagi, except kind of
Polish, drunken swearing.
That was later.
And if you look at his girl, he will tear your fucking eyes out.
You didn't need to look at anyone for him to do that. But he, you know, he's the world champion in Sword and Shield. So he came out and trained with us. So we absorbed what we could. The original question.
He absorbed the kinetic energy of some blows.
Yeah. Like. Oh, definitely. I'm still feeling those. But our chances this year. So we're in a group with USA, Ukraine.
Just and, the US.
Yeah.
I'd salute, but you can't hear that on the
radio. what they themselves term themselves as the dinosaurs but they're getting on, but they're the guys who've been at this the longest. They're very, very skilled fighters. And I'm really looking forward to meeting them on the field, but I'm also really scared. Right. That's part of it, though. So USA, Ukraine, and Italy, and I cannot remember who else in the group. But it's a tough group. Right. So our chances of the 5v5, you know, I expect
Say
us
that
to
again five.
Five versus five, so that's five fighters. We only really have five or six fighters in armor in Ireland. We have more training with us, but armor is expensive. And
you know, there was the cat that headed back to Brazil that was a part of the club. Was there not?
Yeah, Felipe. So he
shouts out to Felipe.
Yeah,
pour one out.
Hope he's
one
listening.
For me, one for Felipe.
Yeah,
he can catch the podcast.
One for me too, please. But he's gone back to Brazil. He was training with us. Yeah. Like I said, it's a good way to meet people. But our chances this year, to keep it straight. So we're not competing in pole arm. I did that last year, and helmet wasn't quite good enough. You can see the dents on it there. So I got a nice concussion for myself.
Oh,
I got out of the group, but kind of That was as far as I got. And then Sword and Shield and Longsword, I think we actually have a very, very good chance of getting out of our group in both of those.
And so this is kind of like similar to maybe like a World Cup tournament. You get out of your group and then on into the next phase.
Yeah, then you have your quarterfinals, semis, and finals, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who's your favorite? Like, if you had to put 50 quid on a certain team, who would you say is, who's your pick?
Hmm.
50 well, quid right now.
Right now.
1-1 odds.
I got you. Well, Poland, I guess, considering their track record from last year.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I don't want you to lug all this gear in for no reason. Is there any way you could give Toby and I something to maybe just inspect while you talk about these kind of things?
Helmet's a good one.
I'm pretty interested. I can't wait to get my hands on some of this gear, because that's half of this, the fun of the sport, is it not? And that... You get to play around some badass technical equipment, isn't it? I probably shouldn't ask you questions while you're actually attempting to dole out some things. This goes on the arm. This is my left arm?
That's for your leg.
This is my right
that's
leg.
That's for your ass, Adam.
Killian, is this for my left arm?
Yeah.
Right leg,
for your
dipshit.
For your giant arm, sure.
Did you notice this build? Do you even lift, bro?
So this is a hat, right?
Jesus. Yeah.
What's with your crown?
I have an enormous hat.
What's up with your crown?
Pull the fabric in the front there.
God.
This is gonna end so badly.
Killian, we're not gonna be able to get it off of him.
No, that's okay.
It's gonna be like a small size condom. It's gonna be an awkward. Oh,
that does
gosh.
Not look comfortable.
This does feel quite safe.
Okay, I'm really worried about my co-host right now. Toby, can you breathe okay?
Yeah.
Hit him.
Oh,
wow. Tell me what's that feel like, please.
That felt pretty good.
what's your safe word, Doug?
It's quite loud in there as well.
I was actually worried more about the sonic impact than the actual physical impact. Yeah. Give him a whack, but there's a pretty goddamn
sounds like music.
I felt like I just had to poop my head out of that helmet.
It feels like a rebirth every time. I just, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can see the dents on it there. That's 2 millimeter hardened spring steel.
I can't do anything. I'm sitting in a very small stool in a cramped space with a leg
armor.
I'll
give you something.
What am I
going
to do? Toby's got a bit of room.
Look here.
Toby, check out. check out this badass leg piece.
Is this thing on my knees? Is that Greaves?
What? No, Greaves go on your lower leg.
Lower leg.
That's this bad boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got it on
the right leg, so that's good.
You can hear the squeaking leather. For all you leather fetishists.
For all of you, yeah, it's lovingly, taken care of leather and, yeah.
Hold on, I want to do the devil horns as well.
So that's not a... That actually is a pretty poor example of a gauntlet in that it's not very well made and it's not very mobile. It's very squeaky.
Something tells me this isn't a poor man's sport.
There's actually a thriving secondhand market for the stuff. So you can probably kit up for a little under $2,000.
That's no joke.
Which is still no joke. I mean, you could. Well, yeah. Some people will laugh at me saying, "Yeah, of course you can."
Yeah, you're just $2,000.
So you know,
like, all my knighthood dreams just fell through
floor. I'm clearly bankrolling or something, but not really. But
who's your benefactor?
Just me.
Yeah. Patron.
I'm the only patron here. So
your girlfriend's like, and we can't go on vacation this year because, because
armor,
the medieval armor. Club.
Yeah, but you can spend whatever you want, really. But I would say,
I'm looking to go in for €100. Yeah,
can I get
bronze mail?
What you get yourself for that is you get yourself killed.
Because
helmets is very important. Obviously, gauntlets are very important. They're the two main things. After that, you can get by with. I really like that. What's called splint. So I have plate here, which is all hammered and made to measure kind of plate, which is most expensive stuff.
Right.
It's lightest, the most.
So these are your gauntlets, or your most expensive piece, are they?
Those gauntlets are crap.
Bracers.
So Greave, they were pricey. I would spend a lot of money on a helmet because you've only got one head and you got two of most other things.
My producer's warning me that we got to start winding down here.
Oh,
before we even start, I know time flies. Like we've been doing
trying to keep you on topic.
Here.
Yeah.
Show's called Unfixed for a reason, cats. But can we see the axe?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I see your axe?
This is my baby. This is Hurtigurty.
Wow.
Okay.
So and that's I'd a polearm that you use.
It's not. It's actually not. It's actually not a polearm per se.
Tell me about your shaft. What is the wooden part?
So my my large black splintery shaft.
Tell me. I swear to God, please put the helmet back on and let me smash you with this.
Oh, don't hit him with that.
Okay.
I forgot everything that I knew when I got
this
hit.
This is the one question earlier. I really wanted to ask you. Like, when somebody comes down with two hands with, say, a broadsword or an axe like this on your helmet, what keeps them from getting their spine compressed? Like,
Your neck. Your neck muscles. So yeah, there's two big things involved: training and equipment, right? So physical, you obviously physical training. So I would have done CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting just for functional strength and endurance. But you need to have good equipment and good training in fighting with weapons to mitigate against blows. Otherwise, you will get injuries. People who don't have either of those things are missing one of those. So if they're cheap out on their armor, or they don't train every week, they're the ones who are going to get injured.
My 500.
That was something that I wanted to ask before. When you train, you sort of do the physical exercise, but then you train with other people. But is there something else that you do, like katas in Asian training, like where you practice form?
Yeah, there are actually. So when we're training, we train actually with, I call them soft weapons. We started off with...
Nerf?
We started off with basically bludgeoning each other with bits of a tree covered in pipe insulation.
Yeah, no, but we did the same thing when I was kids. We called it sword tag. We also did like a bit of LARP.
Those were...
covered in duct tape.
Yeah.
Made out of armor.
So they wasn't pretty.
Plywood.
But we use lighter weapons now because it trains your muscles to be faster for you to react faster. They still sting really bad. Like, you'll still get covered in bruises after training, but you won't be crippled. So that's the weekly stuff. Then we do in armor as well. And in terms of katas, you were asking, you have a thing called a pel, which is a bunch of tires, really, usually. Mm. And you can practice movements. So you need to get your hip into movement. You need to get your shoulders into it. You need to have a wrist snap at the end, not actually snap, but you need to get that extra little bit of force into the blow. And you need to train all that stuff, so you do...
That's what I tell my wife. You need to get more force into the blow.
Yeah.
welcome to my bedroom banter.
So we leave the bedroom banter behind, and let's keep it
focused.
No, but... So that's what we do with training. If you're training by yourself, you will just try and train your muscle memory for strikes to the head, strikes to the body, strikes to the lower body, that sort of thing. And we incorporate that into our training when we are in groups as well. But just one versus one or 5v5, and we use the padded weapons when we have that many people at training, which is happening now. But it's taken a few years in Ireland to take on, yeah.
And so, but you were saying there's also a Dublin practicing
yeah.
group. Is that bigger or smaller, or what's the participation there?
It's a kind of a sore point. It's been pretty tired to get people to go to training. A lot of lip service, and then people don't show up.
Killian, I will do goddamn.
I'm going to do lip service to this. I want to come training.
I shouldn't have said lip service. So he's going to bring in his German wife into it.
You're not going to offend people, bro.
No, I'm only joking. I'm not actually, I'm actually morally kind of outraged myself right or anything either. It's just kind of. They train in Geraldstown, which is out in Ballymun, and good place. You get some training before you even get there if you're walking.
Right, yeah. Went outside and have to take on.
Yeah,
six
your situational awareness goes sky high. Yeah,
I worked in.
But we get to use the hall there, and they're very understanding of our weaponry, and that's I guess anytime we train there, we probably have about 10 people now. Yeah,
not bad.
It's pretty good.
It's tough to bring people out to damn near anything. There's so much to talk about. I really would love to talk
about
it.
Yeah.
No, I know. Don't apologize for damn thing. But listen, I just wanted to express real quick that, we talked briefly that keeping it medieval. I brew my own mead. You said you had trouble brewing mead. I'd like you to try this little pinch, Toby, as well, if you'll indulge me.
Thanks.
And this is a small bit of mead. Now, this is one that we made, and I pitched this, meaning put the yeast in I think... April, it's not an aromatic beverage. It's a taste one. Don't smell. Simply taste. Just have a small sip. Actually, drink the whole thing.
That is good.
Mead is the warrior's drink.
And finish that off for me as a favor, Killian.
Oh, I absolutely will. Yeah, I was going to try and savor it.
Unfixed is broadcast from an abandoned bar, so that sometimes there's some drinking. So that one was about a year old. This one's about 3 years old.
And it was a bit effervescent. There was still a small bit of yeast in the...
Certainly,
yes.
Yeah. Back fermented. It was back sweetened, you noticed. You said you tried once, it didn't go well.
I didn't have the patience, I guess. It ended up being just a disgraceful mess of fermented... You have to keep nightmares.
It's called racking. You just keep pouring it into another container.
There was only so much you could rack that crap.
But try this one. Indulge me, please, Killian, and just try this one. Okay. This is a 3-year-old one.
All right.
Time.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Right?
So that is
smoother.
Three years.
Mm-hmm. It's worth the wait. Okay.
Right. So you've got something you want to share with our listening audience.
Just in case I forget it. If you wanted to check out, we do have a Facebook page, and less likely to get sidetracked there. If you want to support us or anything, it's just if you go to Facebook and it's Medieval Armored Combat Ireland, or you can go to facebook.com/IrishCombat, and then on to go to Twitter, it's armored_combat.
My Twitter's my girl, so
I'm still afraid of Twitter. I tried it and
don't be silly.
It's
I think it's an important outreach tool. So listen, I sincerely appreciate you coming out. We have a parting gift for you, Killian.
Oh, wow.
Three small bottles. Now, this is only 1-year-old mead here, but this is for the boys. Take it to the fellas.
I will be taking this to the distributing honey from
an independent beekeeper on the Hook Peninsula, yeast and water, and that's it.
That is incredible.
We hand dip that in wax and
wow, thank you.
So when we come down and see you guys, only hit us medium hard.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to do Pet Cemetery. We're going to do it here with Killian. I very much appreciate you coming in. I very much appreciate you doing Pet Cemetery. It's kind of an odd thing to ask a guest, but I'm really happy that you decided to do it. So, all right, here we go. This is Pet Cemetery with Killian of Medieval Armored Combat Ireland here on Unfixed. And, all right.
I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery.
Okay, so we had a pet dog called Sandy. He's Jack Russell. This is going back to when I was about 6 years old. Followed me everywhere, up around the garden. We had 3 acres, so we used to go around outside a lot. He was an outdoor dog. And there was a tomcat as well, who they pretended not to be friends because, dogs and cats aren't supposed to be friends. But they totally were. They'd be sunning themselves out in the front of the house. And then they'd chase each other when they thought we were looking. But Sandy was patrolling the grounds, as he used to do, and two of the neighbouring dogs took exception to that one day and attacked him. And he fought them off, in fairness to him, but made it back to the house, but wasn't in good shape. And for the first time probably ever, we did bring him in and call the vet and everything. And try to make him as comfortable as we could. But he didn't make it in the end. He lasted a couple of days and that was it. But he was a really cool dog, and I still miss him, even though that was, over 20 years ago.
He went out fighting like his master, Killian Meehan.
Hopefully I don't fall in the field of battle like Sandy, but yeah.
Damn. No, it sounds like he wins it tough. He's a little hard ass. He wasn't a big guy.
No, he wasn't, but it's the size of the fight in the dog, not the size of the dog in the fight, right?
I'll fucking admit it. No, you say like I'm not a big guy, but you're not a small guy. You aren't. And I know, it's a big difference.
Wiry, yeah, wily. I grease myself up and go out there, yeah.
If you've got any problems with any of the shit I said, show up to one of the goddamn practices and smash me about.
Yeah, egos get left on the side of the field when you go.
I love it, and I mean it. Listen, thanks so much for doing Pet Cemetery. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. Honestly, loved it. Yeah,
I'm glad you had fun. And we'll meet up in the green room, as they say. And enjoy the mead, and we'll see you at a what do you call it, a rehearsal, or not a rehearsal, this is for more stuff for the reenactors, isn't it?
Fight.
Fight. Practice session. No, training session.
Training session. That's
training
it.
Session. Yeah. That's the term.
Sounds good.
So we'll see you at a training session sometime soon. All right, man.
Thanks, Adam.
Toby.
Yeah.
It was a touching Pet Cemetery.
It was. It wasn't very ghostly. Dude kicks him ass, but I'm waiting for the ghost.
Yeah, you know what? You believe that like your animals kind of like come back to life afterwards. I don't know. You're going to be waiting a while, my dude.
Look, when my Pet Cemetery comes, it's going to be fucking the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. You know, the only reason your Pet Cemetery hasn't showed up quite yet is based on the fact that we have had someone that's willing to do it up to this point. And it will come to pass. It will come to pass.
That's true. Just stand by. Stand back for the stories.
Stand back. Stand by. Yeah, all right. So we got to wrap this shit up here, man. But I think just right before we go, I'm scared that the listeners will get away without maybe, I don't know, maybe blood scratch-free, unscathed.
No blood.
Unfixed and unscathed. Not on my goddamn watch.
I haven't cut myself yet.
Yeah, not once tonight. Well done, by the way.
Yeah.
So I think you know what I mean, and I think you know that I mean. I'm feeling a bit apprehensive, perhaps.
Right.
A bit scared.
Oh.
A bit weirded out, maybe.
Oh my god.
I think you know why. You know. What I mean? What's your gut? What's your gut interpretation of why I'm a little bit whacked out?
I don't know. Something
frightening.
Yeah. Freddy Krueger?
Freddy. Has anyone seen Freddy? No, ladies and gentlemen, it is not Freddy Krueger. It is time for the scary news.
Oh my god!
A man was killed by a falling headstone while decorating his family grave. This is from March 31st, 2015. We never said it was current. Man killed by falling headstone while decorating family grave.
Well, I can see that. It would be like, bam, and then there's like the whole normal body, but the head is all pancake under the headstone.
Police say Stephen Wojciak, 74, was killed by a falling headstone as he and his wife were decorating a family gravesite for Easter. Headstone. According to a caretaker at St. Joseph's Cemetery, Wojciak and his wife traveled from Scranton, that's in Pennsylvania, which is kind of scary because it sounds kind of like Transylvania. Little, thank you. Every year to decorate his mother-in-law's gravesite, which is scary also.
The mother-in-law.
But you would drive so far to decorate a mother-in-law's gravesite. They tie a cross to it every year, said Ed Klubas. And after they're done tying the cross, they stand there and they say prayers and then they leave.
I think they tie the cross to it to stop it from rising up again.
But this recent visit would be Stephen's last. Throop police say that Wojciak's wife was tying a string to the headstone when it fell, landing on Wojciak as he was kneeling on the other side.
She totally killed him.
Kubius says the headstone probably fell because when the ground begins to thaw in the spring, some of the bases tilt and the stones can topple off.
That's the worst excuse I've ever heard.
Nothing supernatural. Bishop Joseph Bemmer of the Diocese of Scranton released this statement, seemingly surprised that anything tragic could happen around a holiday in which people celebrate a zombie crawling out of a tomb after dying after having been nailed to a tree. It is unimaginable to think that whilst the visit of a faithful couple to the grave of loved ones in anticipation of the celebration of Easter could have ended in such a tragic manner.
I think possibly the Bishop of Scranton is the worst bishopric ever. Remember that the office was set in Scranton.
Our thoughts and prayers are with the deceased and the family. Wojciak will be buried in the same cemetery as he was killed, in a plot directly in front of the headstone that killed him.
I'll pull one out for Wojciak now.
Do it. Carpet's ruined. And that was actually kind of frightening.
Yeah.
The fact that they drove so far to actually put something on their mother-in-law's gravestone, I find alarming.
Yeah, yeah. Mother-in-laws, the Americans, I don't know.
And but that will about wrap it up. That'll do it for Unfixed from me, the Redemption, as it's called. And
for me, Toby, as I'm called.
Yeah, because that's my actual name. My name, hi, this is Redemption Jensen.
That fucking works.
Redemption Jensen. We are done. We have been Adam and Toby.
Good night.
This has been Unfixed.
Made a chicken wire, getting sick and tired of a friggin' liar. Pelican with some very soft mangoes, a closet full of skeletons and terry cloth kangos. Flew the coop before you hit it, let me warn you. She did a cool hula hoop, but don't get any on you. It's all a big scam to make y'all eat pig ham. When he's on the mic, he's like the trigger man. Fig jam, doom. Not to be confused with nobody, especially since the flows he used were so nutty. Never too woozy to go study. Crews got no clues like old cruddy, Officer McGillicuddy. Watch your six, he got a lot of more tricks, lyrics, bricks on sticks, sure got raw nitics. It's a gift, don't get shot for kicks. With the same slick used to plot sick fics with. Spotted at a chick flick, holding hands, the other one on his swollen glands, a golden chance. Is why he kept them holes in his pants. Rolling in an old van is what he told his stolen fans. Is that true? True. Match from hat to shoe. Snafu, snatching a brew. Labatt's blue. Black true, like that's new. Patch me through. No latch attached. Scat shoe. Catch 22. Super. He's loaded dice nice and overpriced. The arm and the leg, all me life, all your ice. Villain, nag a grieving old hag. Snag a bragger, buys mic cord and leave him holding the bag. Come clean, a bunch of dumb mean cream puffs. A keen drum machine buff who fiends for more queen stuff. Instead of starving, there be problems by the blue guards, alright? Somebody's robbing Lou Dobbs them tonight. And he's on the next flight, moonbound. And makes it a point to stay away from the goon pound. Got some pears that's gone in the lost years. Tears and cheers, born in the cross ears.
Hey, Mr. Thundercleat, what's up you were saying?
It is the robotic hymn of doom.
Well, I always say, nothing livens up a robotic hymn of doom better than an amazing pair of jugs!